Hi, my name's Lou. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Glad to be here tonight. It's a privilege to share my experience drinking Hope with y'all. I was born and raised in St. Pete, Florida. We drove over here last week to speak and found out there was someone else to speak in place of us, so we got to come back again this week. And, you know, no matter what it is that stays sober, I'll do it. I don't care what it is. And I had my first drink when I was 15, and I loved it. It was the magic potion. I said, I'm going to drink as much as I can get my hands on. And I did. And it didn't matter later on as I went along with my progression of my alcoholism. It didn't matter what it was. It didn't matter what kind of booze it was, what kind of dry goods it was, what kind of whatever it was. If it changed, got me out of being reality, I was going to do it. By the time I was 17, I was a daily user, drinker. You know, the drinking age was 18 back then, and I was about the size I am now. And I just, you know, went through life. I got some DWIs, I got some jackpots, a lot of that stuff. You know, it was like, not every time I drank, I got in trouble, but every time I was in trouble, I was drinking. And then after a while, it started making me look like I was a bad guy. You know, you started looking, oh, you got arrested for this, you got arrested for that. I was just an average guy. It was just bad luck, I always thought. First DWI I got was a bum rap. I stopped on the side of the road to help someone. And the cops came. And so I was like, oh, that wasn't fair. I actually got one before that on a bicycle. You know, but, you know, they didn't really give me any, you know, that never went really against my record bad. So, I knew that drinking, I had a problem with drinking. I knew I was an alcoholic. I would say I'm an alcoholic, let's go to the liquor store. And so, after I got that first DWI, I knew that I was like, well, you know what, I like to drink. Actually, I didn't like to drink, I loved to drink. And that was my whole mission in life, was just to drink. You know, and if high school would have been one day longer, I wouldn't have made it. One day longer, I wouldn't have made it. I don't know how I squeaked through there. And it was like, college, what? No, I'm out of here. I'm ready to go start my career as a professional drinker. But I got this DWI. I lost my license for 3 months back then. And you know, there's no dues or fees for Alcoholics Anonymous. But this guy here paid some dues and fees to get in the seat. I don't know if any of y'all did, but I certainly did. And I got this DWI and I lost my license for 3 months. And the first thing, 3 months come and went, and it was like, so what? I want to drink. So I kept drinking, didn't try to get a driver's license. 6 months came and went, I could have went. You know, I knew that if I went and got a driver's license, then I was going to have to start worrying about my drinking and try to control it, which I knew I couldn't do. So I'm an iron worker by trade. I've been doing iron work for 30 years. And, you know, an iron trade, especially back then, was you'd work for a company and then they'd run out of work and you'd go work for another company. Not because you weren't, you know, not because you were a drunk or anything like that, because most people don't want to be an iron worker, you know. A lot of iron workers are alkies or Indians, whatever you want to call them. So I ended up getting this guy laid off, you know. So I got laid off. To do this job, it was down in Miami. And they said the only way you could hire on was you had to get down there. So I needed a driver's license. My old boss said, we'll put Lou to work. He just needs to get down here. So I went down and got my driver's license about a year after I could have been, was eligible for it. I waited a whole year. So I got it, and I went down there, and I'd work and buy my 12-pack or my case and stay in the motel room, drink, and go to work the next day. And just that's how I stayed out of trouble down there. When I was down there for a couple months, I came back home. And the same thing, you know, I go to work, try to control it. I stop on the way home and maybe get one or two beers to drive home with. And then I stopped at this little convenience store that was right on the corner. And I'd buy a 12-pack or whatever. Usually it was a 12-pack on the weekdays. Sometimes it would be more, but if I needed more, I would walk. So I was trying to control it because I knew that I had a drinking problem. But I didn't really know what alcoholism is, the whole depth of it. So about a year to the day, I don't know why, but alcoholics, they always got a cure for everything, don't they? You know, you got a hangover, drink a V8 and a tall boy. It works every time. So I had a sore throat, been up partying all night, and I had this real bad sore throat. And hadn't slept for a day or two, you know, out partying and smoking and drinking. And I said, well, I'm going to stop and get some peppermint schnapps. That cures it. You know, I never drank those for a day in my life. And I decided I'm going to stop at this restaurant that I used to eat at once in a while when I did eat breakfast. And have a sociable drink with the owner. And it was a German guy and his wife. They ran this little restaurant on US 19. So I stopped in there. I forget what his name was. And I said, hey, would you like to have a drink with me? They were closed. I'd gotten off work. I'd worked that day. And it was about 2:30 in the afternoon, 3 o'clock. We'd got finished the job early. And I got this bottle of booze. And I went in there, like a fifth of this peppermint schnapps. And he goes, yeah, I'll have one with you. And he got these little old water glasses that they used to use in the little ma-and-pa shops. And we poured about that much in, both of them. And we were sitting outside the picnic table outside. And we each drank one. And I did it again. And we each drank one. And I went to pour the third one. And he turned it over. You know, he wouldn't have it. He was done. Two drinks and he was done. I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? You know, I didn't know what was up with this. So I kept drinking. So about, you know, somewhere throughout the thing, he says, why don't you let me make you something to eat? I'm like, no, I'm no good. I'm good. Well, why don't you go in the back and take a nap? Well, maybe you should have some water. All this stuff. And this was in 1982. Okay, this wasn't when this friends don't like friends drink and drive. Okay, this was back, way back when. But they were European, you know, and maybe they had a different deal. I don't know, but I said, I've got to get out away from these people. So I got to go party. So I was maybe 3:34 in the afternoon, and I got my bottle of booze, which I wasn't going to leave, and I got in the car. And had a 1955 Chevrolet, had arrived stoned on the front of it. You know, now if that isn't asking for trouble. You know the Florida tag. You say Florida arrived stoned. Some of the old people probably. There isn't very many old people here. They're all. There's no gray hairs here. What's up with this? You know. I even remember sitting in an AA meeting. I jump around a little bit. I remember sitting in an AA meeting on a Friday night one time, and I was down in Seminole speaker meeting. And I'm in the back row, you know, kind of sitting there looking, and all I see is all these Q-tips sitting in front of me. I'm thinking, what the heck? I should be out lighting the town up. This is crazy. Why am I down here with all these old guys? This is insane. And it wasn't that I wanted to go drink, you know, but I just like, what am I doing here with all these old people? And, you know, that's the disease of alcoholism is what it is. But, you know, I jump around a little bit sometimes. My sister came and listened to me speak one time when I was 10 years sober. And she said after the meeting, she come up to me, she goes, you really need to get some kind of sequence to your story because you're just all over. I was like, oh, okay. Well, as you can tell, I didn't listen or it doesn't work very well. So I ended up deciding I got to get out of here. So I adapted back to the, you know, restaurant. And so I reached over. I remember I took one more swig off the bottle. I put it in the floorboard. There was a couple inches left. And I turned the key on this old Chevy. And that was the last thing I remember. And I woke up in jail. Or I didn't really wake up. I came to. Because at this point in my drinking, I didn't pass sleep and wake up. You know, when the booze and drugs wore out, my eyes opened up. And when I had enough in my system and my body was shut down, I would pass out. I could pass out going to a keg party and miss it on a Friday night because I'd been going for 2 or 3 days in a row. And I don't know where I was, where I went. I kind of backtracked. Some people told me they seen me here. Some friends of mine said they seen me getting arrested. You know, but I woke up in jail and it's two in the morning, ice cold. My head felt like a football. I had a headache. My head's pounding. I had, you know, dried blood on the front of my head. I got a scar right there. I had about 7 stitches there, and I had 4 or 5 stitches in the back of my head. And I didn't know what happened. And I'd had a lot of fear in my life, but the fear of, I've been in blackouts, a lot of blackouts. Since I was 16, 17, I had a blackout, had blackouts. I'd been to jail before, but I never had both of them together at the same time. And the fear that came over me was, oh my gosh, what did I do now? And I laid there for 5 hours because I couldn't fall back asleep. The booze was done, wore off. Wandering, you wait all morning until the guy comes through with the key to tell you what you did. He goes and checks and he says, you got another DWI. And I was 23 years old. And just so nobody's got to start doing any math in their head, you know, about, well, he's 23 then, da 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 da. You know, I've been sober, but if I stay sober by the grace of God, by the end of this month, I'll have 30 years of sobriety. And that's no record for anybody in AA. I met a lady not too long ago at the dry dock who had 50-something years, and I was in awe. You know, but it's one day at a time. And I, if I heard anybody say they had 2 or 3 years of sobriety when I first came in, I wouldn't believe that they drank like I drank. Because I was a daily drinker, and I said, there's no way anybody could stay sober that long. But somehow, by the grace of God and the fellowship and the 12 steps and I don't know what else, but I'm here. And I'm just truly blessed, I feel, also, to be sober and be a successful human being, you know, and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything is a byproduct of staying sober. And I got this out of jail after 3 or 4 days. Nobody was racing down to get me. Finally, my boss, I was a workaholic, too, because I liked to drink. That was the reason why, that was my whole motive for working, because I needed money. And I liked to stay drunk. And my boss finally came and got me, and I went back to work. I went to see the lawyer, and again, there's no dues or fees, but he did have his expenses, you know. So he took my case. He asked me what happened. I said, I don't know. I don't have a clue. He says, you don't know what happened? I said, no. And as I walked out, and I've been dry about 4 days now, 4.5, 5 days, because I didn't get high in jail, and as soon as I got out, I went down to see the lawyer, And as I was leaving the door, I had the door almost shut. I don't know why, but I opened it back up and I stuck my head in and I said, I think I need to do something about my drinking. Now, where that came from, I don't know. I just feel like it was the higher power. It's the grace of God. And he said, well, get the number for the alcohol referral service from my secretary, which I did. And I went home and I called it and it was busy. And I don't know why, I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked in the phone book and I saw Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called him. A guy named Jake said, he answered, he said, my name's Jake, I'm at the coffee bar, 1112 Central Avenue down in St. Petersburg. I'll give you a cup of coffee, just come down. I went down there, I got a free cup of coffee out of the deal. I was like, hey, it's me, the guy you talked to on the phone. He's like, oh, well, here you go, you know, see you later, you know. But it was a rough crowd down there. But you know what? I sat in the back. I didn't want anybody to sneak up on me. There was 2 speakers. Didn't hear a word the first one said. So don't worry, Rob, it's all good. Thanks for sharing again. I really loved it, too. It was really good. But the second guy, he stood up there. And he was missing a half a liver, half a lung, and half of this. And half every body part you could be missing and still be alive, I guess. He couldn't stand up straight. But he had 13 years of sobriety. He was glowing. And he told his story about strange places and strange people and throwing up meat and hadn't eaten no meat and all this other stuff. And I could just identify big time. You know, when the meeting got over, my mind cracked just a little bit. And I thought, you know what, maybe I could learn from this guy and not go through all the crap that he'd done. Lost some families, he did everything. I was still a single guy, hadn't had none of that happen. So, the meeting got over and they asked, anybody want a white chip? I says, yeah, I'll take one. So I walked up there, I got the chip, and I turned around and I go, this is what happened to me. And they go, you go sit down and shut up. We'll talk to you after the meeting. So, okay. So I went back, I sat down, and I was getting ready to head out. You know, no, I didn't have no problem. And this guy said, so you think you're an alcoholic? And I still remember his name. Isn't that amazing? All the drugs and alcohol I did. I can't remember some of you I met tonight, but I can still remember those 2 guys' names. His name was Tom. He said, so you think you're an alcoholic? I says, I know I'm an alcoholic. Well, how often do you drink? I said, I drink every day. Is there any? I didn't think there was any other way. You know, I drink every day. And he said, well, they recommend 90 and 90. What's that mean? He says, 90 meetings in 90 days. And I go, I don't know if I can do that. He says, well, can you come back tomorrow? He figured I better keep it simple with this guy, you know. And I says, I don't know, tomorrow is Friday, it's payday, I don't know if I can make it back. Needless to say, I made it back, and I went to a meeting every day for 80 days. I didn't drink in between the meetings. And that tells you, if you don't drink in between the meetings, you go to meetings, you'll stay dry. And that's all I did, was stay dry. I couldn't read the writing on the walls, couldn't understand the steps, couldn't understand the slogans. But when they talked about drinking and drugging and partying, I understood all that part, but I couldn't understand none of the rest of it. And part of the reason I was going was no one had told me, but I thought, well, if I go to the judge and tell them I've been going to AA, they might go easy on my second DWI, which they didn't, of course. I lost my license for 5 years the second time. And the guy told me that first night was, he said, well, come on, let's talk some more. So he come over and I says, all right. He says, you know, you ever seen a rat on a cage going around on a circle, running around on that little thing? I go, yeah. He says, well, probably before you had that first drink, you didn't feel good about yourself. When you had that first drink, you really liked it. And I'm, yeah. He says, so then you drank again when you could, and you really liked it, right? And I go, yeah. That made me feel better, right? And I go, yep. And he goes, so then the next day when you woke up, you didn't feel good. So you drank again to feel better. I go, yeah. Next day you woke up, you didn't feel good. Yeah. So you drank again to feel better. Now I think this guy's been spying on me. Because that was exactly how I felt. I really thought he'd been following me around. For a second, it was like, how does he know this? He knows it because you guys know it too. We all feel that way. But I thought I was the only one who felt that way. I thought you couldn't live without the booze and I had to have it. So I went to a wedding for a friend of ours, family friend, and they toast the bride and groom, and I did. You know, after 80 days of being dry, not sober, just dry. And I went home and I said, CA taught me how to drink, and I've got two cans of beer, and I drank them, and it was all good. The next day it was all good, a 12-pack, and that weekend it was all good, a case, you know, and all cases, two cases, a couple cases, and whatever anything else anybody would bring. If someone brought a bottle of booze to my house, I would take the lid off and throw it away, because they weren't taking the bottle of booze home with them. You know, we all have these little tricks of the trade, don't we? Unbelievable. So I went back out and I drank again and I tried to control and I had a head full of AA and a belly full of beer and that doesn't work. And I'd think, those guys are down there staying sober down there. I wonder what they're doing down there tonight. But then I'd be drinking. And I'd be drinking. And I'd be drinking. And I'd try to control it. I was on probation my whole life too, by the way, from the time I was 17 till whenever. It took 5 years of sobriety before I was just done with the legal system of all the crap. And, you know, I was ready. I just was done. And that was March 31st, 1984. I was done. I was ready to go up to the top of the Skyway and jump off. I knew I needed to go back to AA. And by the grace of God, I bumped into someone in AA and I started going to meetings. And I just was at that turning point. I came to that point where I was either going to go on drinking and drugging for the rest of my life, or I was going to give this way of life a chance, a try, whatever you want to call it. I started going to meetings. I got off the crap. I quit doing the stuff. I started getting a little clearer. I started going to Big Book meeting, hearing people share. Started going to more meetings. I got a home group. Started being a greeter. You know, we're going to make you the greeter because that's all you're good for right now, you know. But I was the greeter. Then they actually let me make coffee. They gave me the key to the place and let me make coffee. I made coffee for a long time. Remember the first time I ever made coffee, I wanted to do really good. So I go to the store and I'm going to get some 8 o'clock or whatever the bean coffee they had back then. And I put it in there. I go, well, if this is this one, I'm going to make it extra fine. It'll taste better. You know? So I put it in there and, you know, it's supposed to have a filter. Not, you know, you're not supposed to use that with the big metal ones. Well, I didn't. So I'm in there and I'm all psyched, ready to go. And I put the cup on. This guy comes and goes, how's it going? First guy comes and I go, oh, I don't know. He goes, let me look. And he goes, oh, and we see all the grains just coming through. And I'm going, oh, what? I'm freaking. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? And he goes, don't worry about it. And man, everybody came in, had the coffee, and everybody's complimenting how good the coffee is. It was all good. Couldn't get them out of there. They're all talking away, flipping the lights, trying to get them out of there. Had the coffee pot all cleaned up and everything. Couldn't get them out of there. I had to just basically chase them out of there. But, and that's how I found out it with life, you know, it's all going to be okay. If you don't drink and you don't drug, you know, it'll all work out. And that's what's happened to me in my sobriety. You know, I ended up getting married in sobriety, and I was married for 18 years. At about 18 years ago, my son was born, and I was able to cut the cord, you know, in the hospital. And then 2 years later, we had a little baby daughter. I had a little baby daughter. I was able to cut the cord there too. And you know, my kids have never seen me, you know, intoxicated, which is cool, you know, to think that. And my son's in college now, and you know, he's partying, smoking dope, and drinking. You know, don't fall for it. And there's nothing I can do about it. You know, I can talk to him. I've told him that I'm an alcoholic. He knows I'm in an AA meeting tonight. You know, but he's got to do what he's got to do. If anybody came to me when I was drinking and drugging and said, "You got to stop," I had to have enough. I had to be done, all the way done. And no matter what it takes, and sometimes it's a struggle. I had to come to that realization. I got to let him go. And, you know, and I've helped a lot of people in the program, and I've got some guys I've sponsored and who are still sober today. And just recently I've had a real bunch of guys want me to help them, almost overwhelming, too many where you really can't really, it's almost too much. And I never want to say no to people. You know, I always want to help people. I'm a big fat people pleaser. I want people to like me. You know, one person say something bad about me, it's like, oh my God, what did I do wrong, you know? But, you know, I got a call the other day from one of these guys I've been trying to, you know, help out a little bit. And, you know, he didn't say he was going to fire me. He told me he was laying me off, you know? I don't know if that's good or bad or whatever, but I'm like, that's cool. You know, I've been trying to get him into some of the steps, and he keeps procrastinating. There's always something going on. So now he's got this other sponsor, you know, who's, you know, got him in the steps. I'm like, great. And that's what I tell anybody. Do you think you're going to hurt my ego because, you know, you found a better sponsor or you heard this or heard that? I'm trying to work on my ego anyways because I want to stay in touch with God. I want to be close to God, you know. And, you know, that's what this program is giving me. It's giving me, number one, a person I can live with is me. I can live with myself today no matter where I go. I can live if everything's falling apart, if someone says something bad to me or whatever, I can live with myself, you know. And I got a higher power that understands me, you know. I went through a divorce in sobriety, you know, and as dignified as I could, where everybody was the winner. Actually, I gave more than half away, but what am I going to do? You know, we're in the state of Florida, right? So, and you know, and I had to pay child support, and I'm still paying, and it is what it is. I'm smiling about it. You know what I mean? My kids love me. You know, nobody can say I've done the wrong thing. I can go down the, you know, the street, and I'm a respectable member of society, not only of AA. And, I got told I talk too much in AA by my buddy over here. You know, and it's neat, you go anywhere. You know, I come in here, and I haven't been over here but a couple of times, and I see familiar faces. Gene, you know, I seen him when he's coming over to the beginner's meeting over there at Oldsmar. I go to the beginner's meeting at Oldsmar. I go to Palm Harbor. I go to Ozona. I go up to the dry dock up in Tarpon. I go all over the place. And it's neat that you can go anywhere. I mean, I've been on cruises years ago. I used to go on a few cruises, and they got AA there. And I've been out to California and gone to AA meetings. And it's all the same. It doesn't matter where you go. You know, one time I was cruising down California. We were driving down the coast, and we got in this motel room. So we said, let's try to hit an AA meeting. We call them up, and the lady's going, where you at? I go, well, we're right here. And she says, well, open the door. I open the door, and she says, see that church across the street? There's a meeting there in a half hour from now. And that's just, you know, insane. This guy was working with, he got all pissed off at something, and he said he's going to get drunk. He called me after all this. He didn't call him before, okay? He's on his way, getting on the bus to get drunk, gets on the bus, he's going to go into the bank to get his money, and he's going to get drunk, and he sits down right next to my other buddy who's got a year and a half of sobriety. You know, what's the chance that happened? And they're talking, and the lady across the, in the next one over says, are you guys in AA? She says, yeah. She goes, I just celebrated 30 years of sobriety. This happened like 2 weeks ago. This is the guy who laid me off. So anyway. You know, stuff happens. It's just unbelievable. You know, and the good things that can happen. I always say good things happen to little winos and little winettes that don't drink and drug. If you stick around long enough for the miracle. I had a guy one day, I was walking through the job site, and I do iron work, like I said, I'm all over the place, and the guy's pushing on this drill, and I always try to be positive, and I'm like, I look over, he's straining, sweat's blowing, I go, hey man, he looks at me, he goes, don't give up before the miracle. Of course, that's busting his chops. You know, we're waiting for that drill to go through, and he goes, are you in AA? He was in AA. You know, stuff that happens. I was doing a job. I lost my dad when I was a year and a half sober. And I cried like a baby. I was working down in Miami on a job, and a different deal down there, Boca Raton, actually. And I cried like a baby when I heard it. I got a call, you need to call home. And I called home, and I found it out, and went in the shower, and I cried like a baby. And my dad was 53 when he died. You know, he was a pretty young guy. And he got to see me sober, and he told his brother, my uncle, he said, man, my boy Lou finally straightened his act out, finally. And I went into the meeting that night, and I shared, you know, what happened to the people. And if you got a problem, bring it to AA, and, you know, let people know. Don't try to do it yourself, because this is a we program. There's no way that I stayed sober on myself. I mean, I talk about spiritual awakenings, and, you know, that was a spiritual experience. Open the door and ask it, telling the lawyer I needed help. Open up the phone book and find an AA, you know. Stuff that's happened has just been unbelievable in my sobriety. And I went there, and there was a guy there who I had given him. I was there when he picked up his white chip. I was down there for 2 months, down 2 or 3 months, and he'd walked in, got his white chip. And I went over and I talked to him, because I remember, that's one thing, I always try to talk to anyone who picks up a white chip or anybody who's new, even if I see a face. I don't know hardly anybody in here, so I don't know if there's anybody who's not new, but I firmly believe, for me, if I see anybody new come to the groups that I go to, I go over and talk to them and welcome, because they may walk in and walk out and just go in and out and be done. I remember the guy really who stuck his hand out to me. So I went over and I talked to him. I don't know what I said. He had something that he was worried about, and I talked to him. And so when I came back home, and I was coming home every couple weeks or every 4 or 5 days, and my wife told me, this guy called, and he said that he wanted you to know that, this was a year later, he goes, he wanted you to know that he got his year medallion. And he goes, it was something you said at the first meeting helped him stay sober. And I was like, what did I say? I'm trying to figure out what he said. I don't know what I said to the guy. But I went back down there 3.5, 4 years later. I went back down there. Someone ran into the building. I was going to be there for one day. And couldn't remember where the meetings were or anything. I looked it up, found a meeting, walked in, and the guy was there. And I went over and went to shake his hand. I recognized him right away. And he saw me and he recognized. I go, hey. He goes, I don't know if you remember. I go, yeah, I remember you. And he goes, I was there when you got your white chip. And he goes, yeah. He goes, I just celebrated four and a half years. And he goes, you know, I was getting ready to drink a couple months ago. I said, really? He goes, yeah. I go, what happened? He goes, well, my dad died. And he says, I was this close to drinking. And he said, I remembered there was a guy who had a year and a half of sobriety and he didn't drink. You know, and he says, and I knew that if he could do it with a year and a half, and he had like 3.5, 4 years, he says, I know that I can do it. He says, because of what you shared that meeting 3.5 years ago, he didn't drink that day. So you never know when something you say is going to help someone else. And I've found that over and over and over. I've had new guys help me so much, and that's, you know, that's part of the whole deal, is helping new people. It keeps me out of myself. Because I can get into that. You know, if you hear me whining, please, just slap me. Hit me with a 2x4. Whatever. You know, I've been given so much. I got some jingle in my pocket. I got some, you know, snap to my walk and some twinkle in my eye. You know, and that's all from staying sober. And I got a new nickname the other day. My buddy was telling me, oh yeah, you know Lou? And he goes, you mean Jingle Lou? Jingle Lou, why you call him Jingle Lou? Because he's always talking about, you know, and I don't always say that, but I go to a lot of meetings. I've had the privilege to go to 600 meetings in the last 600 days. You know, and that's no record for anyone either. But, you know, just because I work for myself and I've been able to do that. And it's great. The more meetings I go to, the better life is. And it's like you think, I'm more busy now than I've ever been. I run a business. I've had a business since 1992. I've had my own business since 1992. And I'm still in business and life's good. And, you know, everything's just great. You know, I can't say enough about AA. You know, I can tell you a couple good jokes if you want, you know, but, you know, I do got to tell you the one story about the two alcoholics. You guys, most of you don't know. There's a couple guys who might have heard me say this story, but I like to tell it. The two alcoholics been walking on this railroad track for a long time. Hot out. They've been walking for like 2-3 hours. It's hot out. And the first one looks at him and goes, man, this is the longest staircase I've ever been on. The second one looks over, it's not how long it is, it's these low handrails that are killing me. You know? Can you imagine? And get a visual on that. And I tell that joke to people who aren't alcoholic and they don't get it. You know? But I do. Because that's how I was. I didn't have a clue. I did not have a clue what it was like to be sober and how screwed up I was. I did not have a clue. But I came in here and found out long enough. And they say, stick around for the miracle. Stick around to see if you want it. You know, see if you like it. If you don't, you can go out and refund your misery. There's plenty of sayings. And now the slogans actually do make sense to me. Now I can read them. It took a long time. There was a guy who was working with me and he said, he heard I didn't drink anymore. And I go, well, yeah, I don't drink anymore. And he'd just go, well, how'd you do it? He'd go one a day at a time, and I go, well, I just kind of, and I'd been dry about 8 months, 9 months. And so I went to a meeting every Monday night. And so, Monday morning he came in, and he didn't have no money. We'd worked overtime, he's broke, he wanted 10 bucks. I floated him the 10 bucks. So that, the next Tuesday he came and he goes, I went to an AA meeting last night. And I go, really? I go, so did I. And he goes, I knew you were an AA. I knew you had to be an AA. I heard he'd been an AA before, you know? And I'm like, well, why? He goes, why didn't you say anything about the slogans? And I'm going, what slogans? He'd been dropping slogans for, you know, 5-6 months trying to get me to break my anonymity. And I wasn't trying to not ignore them. I just didn't know what they were. That's how messed up I was. I did not have walking around sense. Did not have walking around sense. And today, now people call me up, want my opinion. You know? About different stuff. All different stuff. I actually balance 2 checkbooks these, you know, now. My personal and my business checkbooks. But the most important thing to me is my sobriety. If y'all have never been over to 301 over in Clearwater, they got a little sign on the door, on the wall, life's priorities. Number one, sobriety. Number two, everything else. And anybody who knows me knows that that's my number one priority today still, is staying sober no matter what. No matter what happens, I have got to stay sober. You know, because without that, all bets are off. You know, I got remarried in sobriety after, you know, when I first got divorced, I thought, oh my God, I never want to see another woman again. Please, leave me alone, you know. And I managed to, you know, finally get through that. And I got remarried, you know, 5 years ago. And I'm still happily married. And so, you know, things are good. You know, this is my life. You never know what's going to happen. You go through sobriety. Let me tell you, if you go through sobriety, you're going to have some problems. You're still going to have problems. They don't go away. But we learn how to deal with them a lot better. Dignified. And not make them worse. You know, there is a place you can go if you want. Where there is no problems, I don't think you want to go. That's the cemetery down the street. You know, you go down there, you don't have no more problems. As long as you got life, you're going to have situations. I hear about positive attitude. Yeah, we don't have problems. We have opportunities to work through situations. Makes you sound important. Yeah, I'm not that important. My buddy Ed used to say, I'm just another bozo on the bus of sobriety. You know, because that's all. I mean, I'm not any better than anyone else in here. We're all in the same boat. We're all just one day away from it, you know, or just stay one day sober. That's it. If you stay in the middle, you know, they say, what's the smartest gazelle? Is the one in the middle of the herd. And the same thing with AA. If you stay in the middle, it's hard to fall out. If you're around the edges, I've seen them. I've had friends die. I've seen people die. I've chased a guy at one time. I didn't chase him, but I seen him. He got mad. Someone said something to me. Walked out of the AA meeting, and I was trying to get him to come back in, and he didn't. He says the last words out of his mouth to me: "I'm going across the street to get an ice cream. Don't worry, I won't. I'm not going to drink." And they found him 4 days later with the flies on him in the bushes, dead. You know, resentment. Those aren't any good either. Don't hang on to those. If you want to get sober, work the steps. You know, get yourself a sponsor. If you don't like the one you got now, lay them off. You know. I told a buddy of mine that the other day, and he goes, "Well, I've been around for 40 years. I never heard anyone say that one before." But work the steps, help other alcoholics. You know, I just got the privilege of doing a, you know, fourth and fifth step with, you know, three different guys, and it was really cool. And you know, and it cleans your soul too to do that. It's being involved in this program. I take it real serious. I like to hear the laughter, and I like to laugh at myself. You know, and it's just the crazy how stupid we can get, and I can still get crazy as a jitterbug. You know, crazy. But if not as long, and if I hang around and go to a lot of get in AA and go to a lot of meetings. By going to a lot of meetings, people say meeting makers make it. Well, why? Well, this lady said I went to a meeting every day. Well, you all heard her, Patty. She spoke here or spoke at Saturday Night Live. Someone just told me she spoke. She said I went to meetings 18 years. I went to meetings. I stayed drunk for 18 years. Well, there's more to it than just going to meetings. But most times, meeting makers make it because you're going to hear about the steps. You're going to hear about the solution. You're going to get a fellowship of people around you, and it's going to work. And I believe meeting makers make it. She's the only one I've ever heard say that. I've never heard anyone else say that. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. Quick story about one of the first 12 steps. I'm now running out of getting short on time. I've got a few more minutes, but and I shared this last time. I got to speak here at Saturday Night Live at Christmas time, which was a privilege also. Right before Christmas, I got a call. We got a call. Go to this AA 12 step call. So I went to the hospital, and the girl said. And so we went in, and we went to the room, and we got some pamphlets. And there's this guy laying there. He's got this pillow on his belly, and I'm like, "Hey, we're here from AA. What are you doing here? Someone said they want to talk to someone in AA. No, don't want to talk to nobody in AA." Maybe in the wrong room or whatever, you know. We didn't know. Went to walk out the door, and just as we're out the door, this lady shows up with a cup of coffee in her hand. She says, "Hi, who are you? Well, we're here from AA, but we can't find the room." She says, no, you're at the right place. Come back in." Went back in. He says, "Oh, I don't want to talk. You said you'd talk to him." So come to find out, this wasn't even a pillow. This was his belly. I thought it was the worst case of cirrhosis of the liver I've seen to this day. To this day, and I was only sober about 2 years at the time. I mean, it was crazy. And he said, "No." So we told him, "Well, you guys don't look like alcoholics. What makes you?" "Well, we got problems in our life due to alcohol. That's why we think we're alcoholics." "Well, I know an alcoholic. He hides his booze all over his house, blah, blah, blah." And I go, "Well, do you have any problems?" And he goes, "No, I don't have no problems." And his wife, he goes, "Well," I go, "what's going on here with your stomach?" He goes, "Well, this is the first time I've ever been in the hospital." And his wife says, "No, you were here last year for pancreatitis. And the year before for something else alcohol related." Well, we stayed a little bit longer. We gave him our number, gave him the pamphlets, "Call us, we'll take you to an AA meeting." He agreed he'd go to an AA meeting with us. A couple weeks go by, we get a phone call. Says, "This is Mrs. So-and-so. You came and talked to my husband at the hospital." I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, is he ready? We'll come pick him up. We'll take him to an AA meeting." He says, "No, he didn't check out. But I want to thank you for coming and talking to him, taking the time out of your day to come talk to him." So here was a guy who was on his deathbed. On his deathbed. Never heard of AA, never been to AA, never got a chance to walk in those doors that we all walked in tonight. And when I tell that story, it just gives me some real gratitude. And if anybody in this room, if only one person got something out of it, I'd like to welcome you back, you know, welcome you back. Anybody who's struggling, stick around for the miracle. And if anybody got something out of this, it was worth me coming. If one person got something out of it, you know, it was worth me coming over here to share my experience and hope. And thanks for letting me share my experience. Thank you.